So one of the duties of a child, and by extension then also grandchildren and other relatives, is making merit for the departed. Now this is one beautiful thing which can help us, you know, uplifting our mind if we feel very sad due to the loss. And it's natural, it is normal, and we lose someone we love, you know, that we are very down. But what can help us, you know, to come out of that again is that we actually can still do something for them. Because if someone dies, they don't vanish. This is, you know, very much the modern view. Many people believe, you know, once you're dead, there's just nothing. Have you encountered that view? I think it's almost a default position. This is actually the default position on which all of modern medicine operates. Because, you know, in, so to speak, scientific medicine, Western modern scientific medicine, they have no explanation for anything that could survive death. They only understand the material phenomena of the body, the brain, chemical processes, electrical processes, physical, mechanical processes, molecules, atoms interacting, and so on. So this is quite a pernicious wrong view which is underlying in our whole modern society, that the human being is nothing else but the functioning of this physical body. And when the body finally dies, then there's simply nothing. However, there's not nothing, but what we call consciousness or mind, or the heart in a metaphorical sense, that is actually not eliminated at death. This is such a crucial and important point. It's a kind of revolution for your whole worldview if one moves, once one understands or one has conviction that death is not just nothing, but that it continues. And that mind, that consciousness, will connect usually with a new physical body, because we are attached to the physical body. Why? Why are you so attached to your physical body if it gives you so much trouble? People complain, headache, backache, and it gets worse every year. So why are you still so attached to that thing? Why? Exactly, the senses. This body is a vehicle that we can enjoy central sensations, the central pleasures. We had quite a nice meal here today, no? Tamagimi has got very nice food from all these kind and generous people, isn't it? Could you enjoy a nice meal if you didn't have a body? Is that possible? Can you chew some nice food if you don't have a mouth and teeth? Can you taste food if you don't have a tongue? Can you get this beautiful fragrance and aroma if you don't have a nose? Is a hot shower, or by now we are getting hot as summertime, is a nice cool shower on a 40 degree day, is that very enjoyable, having a cool shower on a hot day if you don't have a body? No, you need a body, no, to hang out in the pool, to eat nice food, dancing, going on a wave, dancing the night away without a body? Not possible. When people fall in love, it's usually all about the body, isn't it? Would be difficult to fall in love with a disembodied kind of entity. Doesn't really work. So this is where the attachment comes from. Because we all understand deep down, instinctively, that to be able to eat, to enjoy that, to listen to music, to hug another person, to wear nice clothes, anything, which normally gives us joy and happiness in a central way. You know, the body is a necessary condition. And this is why we can't let go, even if the body is giving us pain all the time. And you can have that situation that someone is very old, very sick, dying, and in excruciating pain, and they still can't let go of the body. Because they're still hoping for this pleasure the body can give us when it's working well. And that is the reason that once we are out of the body, that the mind then wants to latch on to a new body, and it can get all that stuff again. One thing which is quite normal for spirits, so someone who is not in a coarse physical body, a being not in a coarse physical body, material body, they can often move around very easily. What makes it so difficult if you want to go to Sri Lanka? Your mind can go there immediately, isn't it? You can just think of Colombo or Candy or Gaul, and your mind is right there. So why don't you go? Because of the physical body. This is what you need the aircraft for. 70, 80 kilos or 100 kilos or however much has to be dragged a few thousand kilometers. This thing is what you need the aircraft for. The mind can go there immediately. So once a person is no longer connected with this coarse physical body, they can move anywhere. This is what happens usually when you have this marriage sharing. They have the karmic connection to you, and then you invite them mentally, and then they often are right there if they're in a position that they can do that. If your father-in-law, your grandfather is already reborn, say, as a human, and it would take a little bit longer, but if he is an embryo right now, and he obviously wouldn't be able to come, just like you, you wouldn't know, maybe some past relative from your last life is sharing merits with you right now, but you wouldn't even know it, because you're already born in this world, in this human new body. But if they are either still in the transition, or if they are born in what is called the Peta world, Peta Lokana, hungry ghosts, then they can move very easily. Another thing, once they are no longer connected with a coarse material body, they can often read thoughts, and they see the emotion that is quite normal for spirits. This is why you have to be careful if you're ever in contact with a spirit. Now, some people do that with a Ouija board or some seance and things, and some people succeed and they get some contact with some usually very minor or ghost or spirit, and sometimes also malicious ones. The problem is, this spirit may be able to answer questions you ask from them, which may appear very impressive to you. And you contact them by some means, people who do that, and then they ask them maybe for the name of the maiden name of their great-great-grandmother, which no one should know. But you may be thinking about that name, and the spirit can take it directly from your own mind. And then they tell you that name, and then you're thinking, wow, they know everything. And once you think they know everything, then they can start misleading you. Sometimes intentionally, sometimes unintentionally. So I strongly recommend there's no point actually contacting spirits. You wouldn't usually contact anyone higher anyhow. It's usually the very low spirits who would be coming. And you can't get any better instructions than from the Buddha anywhere in any case. So there's no point. But this was just as an aside. The crucial one is that the departed one may well be present. And this is an important part of that mabbat sharing. Imagine you are the departed one. Imagine you have passed away. And now, when you're missing everyone and you can't really communicate with them anymore, but now you witness that they're all coming together. All your loved ones are coming together in your name and trying to help you and sharing good karma. You would feel just very happy. And that happiness is a big part of it. On the other hand, if you feel very sad, and then the dear departed one picks up on that, they notice that, what will that be like for them? Imagine you die, and then you see your brother, your mother, your father, they're all totally devastated, they don't eat and drink anymore, and they're only crying all day. How would you feel? You would be quite distraught. You would want to help them. But if you don't have a body anymore, physical body, and you have ended this life, how are you going to help your loved ones who are now distraught? You can't. For the departed, the job is to move on to the next life. They can't get back in that body anymore. They can't get back in that life. So important that they let go so that they can move to the next life. But when they see the dear loved ones devastated and they want to help them but can't, this is a huge obstruction for them for moving on. Now, how do you respond as a mother if one of your kids has some pain or desperate or depressed? That would be the main thing for you. Can't think about anything else. Now, can you help them? It's the same once they have passed away. They feel like that, but they can't help. So we're actually doing them a disservice if you're really distraught. For sure, they understand if you're sad. If your father or mother passes away, they understand that you be sad. But it's important that they can also see that we are not devastated, not completely destroyed by that sadness, and that we can come out of it by letting go. And we're actually doing them a service. Because if we can let go, then means we can come out of the grief and we can again live a successful and happy life. And those who love us, they usually want us to live a successful and happy life. So the letting go is the best thing we can do. And that is for us, for the rest of the family, but in particular also for the departed. It's also the best for them. But letting go in the Buddhist sense, letting go based on wisdom, does not mean forgetting. Sometimes people think if you say letting go, or I don't even think about them anymore, now, this isn't meant. It's meant understanding the impermanence of all conditioned phenomena and letting go from that understanding. And at the same time, I can still have gratitude, I can still have appreciation, one can still have loving kindness and compassion. And based on that, one will continue to regularly follow that beautiful tradition of sharing merits on the death anniversary usually. It can be done on other occasions as well. Yes, someone is for the YouTube and so on. Someone is just asking, she has lost her brother about a month ago, and now when she is meditating, she finds it very difficult to let go. And in the meditation, she does things of him and imagines how she could hopefully still interact. This is a common problem and it's a mitcha samadhi. It is kind of wrong samadhi. This is not the meditation the Buddha would recommend. And it happens quite regularly when people are in grief and then they try maybe to focus on the breath or some other meditation object. What they're really doing is actually not focusing on the breath, but they focus on this very strong emotion. Because if you lose someone you really love, the emotion is just very, very strong. And it's kind of there all the time. It's a little bit like fish in water. The fish is no longer even aware that he is in the water, because it's there all the time. And you have this strong emotion, and you may be thinking that you're watching the breath. You may be doing that a little bit. But the biggest thing is that you focus on the grief. And when you do that, then the mind starts concentrating and unifying on that, and then it actually gets worse. So it's really important in that situation to mindfully check out in your meditation, whether you're really with your meditation object, or whether you are just developing a samadhi on the grief, so to speak, a samadhi on that sadness. And if that happens, then you have to pull yourself out of that samadhi meditation. In particular, anapanasati, watching the breath, I don't think is a very good one because it's very, very subtle. And the emotion of loss and grief is very, very powerful. So you have already such a powerful emotion, and then you try to instead focus on something that is so subtle that people often report, oh, I can't notice the breath at all, it's like I'm not breathing, it's so subtle, very difficult. It may be better, for example, to walk meditation and to just repeat Etipiso Bhagava Adahang. Because that is more powerful to take your mind away from the grief. Now, the sensation of walking and the chanting. Because you need something really strong to get the mind away from focusing on that unwholesome grief emotion. And if you walk and you're loud, you can even, you have got two retreatants, but no, I think they wouldn't mind if you walk on one side and then you just loudly even repeat Etipiso Bhagava Adahang Samma Sambuddho. You can even walk quite fast, chant quite fast. Another one is not sitting so much, just quietly and focusing internally. You may need some distraction. Pick the most wholesome distraction you can find. Listen to a good Dhamma talk. Do a lot of chanting, puja. More active, not just quietly sitting. You do your puja, you do your chanting, or you do it also in English or even Vietnamese, that it's even more strong in your mind. And sometimes going on a solitary retreat may not be so effective to address it, unless you have the mindfulness and the wisdom to notice when your mind starts excessively concentrating on the grief. This is a wrong kind of samadhi. What one needs is a stronger focus on wisdom, on contemplating that everything is impermanent. And try to remember all kinds of things which you have experienced in life and which have changed and become otherwise. And you can actively think about that. Some people have samadhi and are strong enough they can get into samadhi even in that situation on a wholesome object, samma samadhi. But for most people it's very, very important in that situation to focus much more on wisdom and insight. everything arises and passes away. It's actually amazing that we are not more aware of that, because it's constantly happening. Starting with the bodily posture, it's constantly moving and changing. Can you just take one posture and remain like that for the rest of eternity? Totally impossible. The posture is impermanent. And if we try to make it permanent, if you decide, okay, I'm not moving now, how long can you do that? And if you're really determined, I'm defeating impermanence. My posture is going to be permanent now, like this, for the next millennia. What will it feel like after an hour or two or three? No, unbearable pain. Unbearable pain. If you try not to move the body, if you try to make the posture permanent. Now, this is why we always have to get up, move, even in sleep. You may be thinking, oh, if I can lie down, I can be in the same posture for weeks. Give that a try and just lie down in one posture and don't move. You will notice it's totally impossible. Even in the most comfortable bed, in your most comfortable way of lying, after an hour, if you're awake, or definitely after a few hours, you will be unable to do it. But paralyzed, Well, this is what happens, there will be pain. If you try to make something impermanent permanent, the result is always pain. And the result is always that you can't do it anyhow. You just cause yourself pain. And we can experience that everywhere, inside, outside, mentally, physically, in ourselves, in other people. You're in a situation which is just really nice, and then you want to keep it like that. You won't succeed, it changes. You have got an emotion, you feel so happy. Why don't you just keep that happy emotion? Keep going to the rest of your life, and you're just over the moon. Why don't you just keep it going? What's wrong? Have you ever been really like totally, wow, I'm so happy. So why didn't you just keep going like that? It's much nicer than being upset and down and... So why don't you stay with that happy emotion? You can't do it, no? It's impossible, the emotions change. So this is what you have to watch. This is what you have to watch, how it's all changing. And then to remind yourself, nothing can stay the same. It's all changing, and the only way of dealing with that is letting go. Can you remember in winter when you were hoping, finally it gets warm again, springtime is so cold, my hands are cold, and this dry air is bad for my skin. Do you enjoy it now when we get 40 degrees? Are you looking forward to winter again, or autumn at least? Every little thing which you focus attention on, wherever you look, it's amazing, how can we overlook that? You look into the mirror. Do you look the same like 10 years ago or 20 years ago? Get some old photos, 10 years ago, 50 years ago, 60, 70 years ago for some. or get one of these apps. Don't they have apps now where you can make yourself aging and things? This is a good one. Try it out. What do you look like once you're 80? Or if you're very young, what do you look like once you're 30 or 40 even? It's happening all the time. Every single person we meet is aging every single day and changing, and usually not for the better. If aging meant that we become more healthy and more beautiful, wouldn't be a problem. Unfortunately, aging means we become more ugly, sicker, weaker. This is the issue. And it's happening all the time. And we don't want to look at it. Because it's frightening. But it's only frightening if it doesn't lead to letting go. And if we're not looking at it only to make ourselves depressed, and if you constantly think about how everyone is aging, you may think that leads to depression. But the aim of that reflection is that it leads to letting go. Don't be so obsessed with the body, whether you're a little bit taller or shorter, or darker or lighter, or bigger or smaller, or fatter or skinnier, or the nose is longer or shorter, or up or down, or left or right. What's the big point? I mean, if you have got maybe someone living to 100 years and then the body is in the coffin, does it much matter whether the nose is a little bit this or that? Why are we so obsessed with that? So impermanent. The point is letting go, and if we reflect on that we can let go. We're not so attached to the body. Is it possible that virtually everyone has been our mother or father once? You're basically quoting the Buddha. That is one thing the Buddha had pointed out to us. Because samsara is without discernible beginning. It's not like we had only one past life. It's not like we had only 10 or a million or a trillion. However far back you go, even if you manage to go a trillion lifetimes back, obviously, it would have to be another one before that. We cannot find a beginning point. Beginning point, Bhubhakoti Nepanyayati, cannot be defined or found. So if you are knowledgeable about math and statistics, if there are so many, then statistically, you would have been close to any of the other beings at some past life. It's quite fascinating that once you acknowledge the endlessness of samsara or the beginninglessness of samsara, it can end with the experience of nibbana. But the beginninglessness of samsara and how many lifetimes you already had in the past, once you acknowledge this, then you're have this kind of logical inference which you can't deny logically, mathematically, statistically. And one is you tend to have had close relationships to virtually everyone you encounter. Because in some life you were close. Another thing which follows logically is that you had virtually all experiences. Maybe you think, I wish I was a billionaire. Doesn't matter so much. In some past life, you've been a billionaire. Maybe you think, I wish I was president of a powerful country, like president of China or the US. I'm not sure how much power the president of the US really has, but any case, so you want to be in a powerful position. What's the point? You have been there anyhow in some past life. You want to have 10 kids and 100 grandkids. in some past life you had that. You want to be a king or a princess, you want to be a celebrity, a photo model, a movie star. In some past life you've done it all. Except one thing you have not yet done. There's one thing which you have to put on your bucket list, the only thing which we have not yet done in no past life. What is the one thing which we have not yet done or achieved in any past life? Yeah. Exactly. Because else you wouldn't be here sitting there in the body. Exactly. Realizing Nibbana, attaining enlightenment, experiencing the vimutti, total freedom, release. This is the only thing worthwhile to put on your bucket list, because all the other stuff on your bucket list you actually have done already anyhow. It's quite a fascinating logical, statistical inference once you have confidence and conviction in the beginninglessness of samsara and in these endless lives we had before. There's still another one. It also means, you know, if you look at some person who is, you know, maybe movie star, photo model, super handsome, beautiful, hunky, adored by everyone, we have been that. And if you look at something ugly and disgusting, a cockroach, a cane toad, we have been like that as well. So we are no longer so judgmental. We don't look down on someone who is maybe unattractive or yucky or difficult and so on. And we are not overawed and blown away if someone is rich or famous or celebrity. It changes all the time in samsara.